This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Jenny Wetter, Public Policy Director at the Population Institute. Jenny Wetter is here to tell us about the Population Institute's new report titled Senseless, The War on Birth Control, published in October 2017. Welcome, Jenny.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the Population Institute?
The Population Institute, we are a nonprofit that works to promote access to family planning services, information, and education. We work to create a world where girls and women have full gender equality and where women have access to reproductive health services and every child is a wanted child. And global population is brought into balance with a healthy environment and resource base.
Would you like to elaborate on the history of the Population Institute?
Sure. The Population Institute was founded in 1972 to talk about world population growth. And they work to find a population that seeks to balance population growth in the environment. And one of the ways we do that is through advocating for voluntary family planning, making sure that girls get a primary school education, and these things can lead to a healthy environment and a balanced population.
What has been the effect of modern methods of contraception, such as the pill?
I mean, it's really had a transformative effect in the U.S. and overseas. It really gives women the ability to decide when, if, and how many kids they're going to have. And that gives women so much more control over their lives. It's, you know, often referred to as one of the best medical advances of the last century. It means that I can decide I don't want to have a kid now. I can go through college or I can plan my job around it. It gives women so much more ability to plan their lives. And it leads to healthier women, healthier families, and overall healthier communities.
What are the environmental implications of contraception?
It's a little complicated. Population growth in the environment, it's not necessarily a straight line. You really look at population growth as being a challenge multiplier. So you have a lot of countries where there's already rapid population growth and they are facing other issues, whether that's environmental degradation or water scarcity or hunger and malnutrition, conflict and political instability. Rapid population growth will just make those issues much harder for them to address, those existing issues, and it could exacerbate them. So having women be able to decide their families can help decrease the pressure on all of these systems. And by giving women access to family planning and the tools to be able to use that. So when you're looking at developing countries, that means working to end things like child marriage. It means making sure that girls are getting an education, giving them tools to have control over their lives, and family planning is one of those tools. Until women have the power to make that decision, just having the family planning available isn't going to be enough.
Before we go into more detail, would you give an overview of the findings of your report?
Sure. So the report looks at kind of the way that the conversation around birth control has changed. You know, when it first came out, it was controversial, but that rapidly changed and you had this kind of bipartisan consensus that access to family planning and birth control was a good thing. And you saw initiatives like Title X being passed in the 70s with bipartisan support. You had George H.W. Bush being a large advocate of Planned Parenthood and of Title X and birth control. And then you saw that has slowly started to change, and you've seen less of the bipartisan consensus on birth control. And that's really escalated since about 2011, where you've really seen so many more attacks on ways that women have to access birth control to make it harder to get. And the report takes a look at all the various ways that birth control has been under attack.
Looking historically, what were the legal decisions that made contraception legal in the U.S.?
So first, you had Griswold v. Connecticut. It was in 1965, and it ruled that Access to contraception is protected under the right to marital privacy. So it gave married women the ability to use birth control. It wouldn't be until 1972 that you would see in Eisenstadt v. Baird that unmarried women would also be given that same right to access contraception. Those are really the two largest court decisions to basically ensure that everybody could have access to family planning services.
In the U.S., what funding for contraception and other family planning services was put into place following 1965 when contraception was made legal?
There's a couple different programs that fund family planning services. One is Title X. It's administered through the Department of Health and Human Services. It gives low-income people, men and women, access to reproductive health services. So it's family planning services, it's cervical cancer screenings. For women, it's tests and treatment for STIs. And that is the only broad-based, low-income family planning directly funded program. Then you have Medicaid. And Medicaid plays a larger role. A lot more people access family planning services through Medicaid. Medicaid has health services that are mandated, and family planning is one of them. So with the expansion of the Affordable Care Act, that means that everybody at 138% of the poverty line or below has access to family planning services. But states can often go beyond that and decide that they want to expand their Medicaid availability for family planning. And so you see a variety of states have done this, quite a few, and whether that's they've expanded it to include men having access to those services or minors, or have expanded the income threshold. So you have some states going as high as 300% of the federal poverty line can access family planning services through Medicaid.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Jenny Wetter, Public Policy Director at the Population Institute. Our topic is the Population Institute's new report titled Senseless, The War on Birth Control. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. To what extent has the U.S. helped fund family planning internationally?
The U.S. is the largest funder for international family planning. A lot of countries contribute to international family planning, but the U.S. historically has given the most. And that has been true for the last 50 years, that the U.S., no matter what administration has been in, they have had family planning programs. You've definitely seen the amount rise or fall depending on who was in office, but there's always been a commitment that this was important and that we needed to ensure that women had the ability to control their lives. This year, when President Trump put out his first budget, it was the very first time we had seen a president propose zero funding for international family planning. And that would have a huge impact on women's lives. That's not the only way that the Trump administration has attacked international access to family planning. Since they have taken office, they have quit funding the United Nations Population Fund, which works in countries the U.S. can't work in. It helps expand our reach. They work in a lot of places around the world, and they also do a lot of work in humanitarian settings. One of the big projects they have right now is in the Zaatari refugee camp, where they have a birth center where they can ensure that refugees are getting access to safe maternal health care and safe birth. And with the Trump administration eliminating all the funding for it, UNFPA is kind of having to struggle to find funds to cover projects like that.
How effective has U.S. international aid for family planning been?
I would say, it's been very effective. There's still a long way to go, but you have seen programs getting established in countries that have really helped lower the amount of unmet need, which is women who in the next 2 years would like to delay or not get pregnant but are not using a modern method of contraception. You've really seen that number fall. And, you can look at it by the numbers. The Guttmacher Institute has looked at what we get for our funding, what the U.S. contribution to bilateral assistance and family planning assistance buys us. And so if the Trump administration were to manage to eliminate all funding, there would be 25 million fewer women and couples who would have access to contraceptive services, and that would result in 7.4 million more unintended pregnancies, 3.1 million more abortions, most of which would be unsafe, and 15,000 more maternal deaths. So we do get quite a bit for our money, and it's also a really good buy. You've seen ranges on for every dollar invested in family planning services, save $7 in other programs. So not only is it the right thing to do, it's also the smart thing to do.
You point out in your report that in the past several years, opponents of birth control have become more active. What rationale is given for being against birth control?
You know, I would say one of the biggest things you see is not attacking birth control head on. It's conflating abortion and birth control. Like, they go after Planned Parenthood and argue it's because they provide abortion services. While that is important and they should provide abortion services, it's a small part of what they do. If the U.S. were to cut funding to Planned Parenthood, it would affect women going for contraceptive services, for STI treatment, things like that, for their basic health care. You also see, you know, arguments that, you know, again, they don't want to fund abortion, and then picking and choosing and saying, you know, this kind of birth control is actually a type of abortion instead of what it is, which is birth control. And then you see also here birth control doesn't work, which is just flatly not true. And then you also hear kind of the moral argument about, you know, not wanting to pay for people's poor decisions. Basically, they don't want to pay for women to have sex. I would say those are kind of the biggest strains, but I think you hear that one a little less, the moralizing on it, directly. I mean, there are some people who do that, but I think the biggest thing over the last several years has been really to conflate abortion and birth control.
During the 2011 to 2016 timeframe, what steps did birth control opponents take at the federal level to withdraw support for contraception?
So one of the first steps that we saw was to start attacking funding for birth control. So whether that was trying to cut funding for Title X from decreasing it quite a bit to trying to eliminate it completely, particularly in the House, which has had Republican control since then, you would often see in their budgets that they would just eliminate the funding for Title X. You also saw in 2011, then Representative Mike Pence offered an amendment that would have prohibited Planned Parenthood from getting any funding, which you often hear referred to as defunding of Planned Parenthood, which is a bit of a misnomer. It's not like Planned Parenthood gets a big check from the U.S. government. What Planned Parenthood gets is reimbursed for services they provide. So they get funding through Medicaid for seeing Medicaid patients. That was one of the first attacks you started to see. And then you started to see attacks around the contraceptive mandate. So under the Affordable Care Act, one of the provisions was that you had to cover preventative services with no copay. And that included a list of services that were considered preventative, one of which was birth control coverage. And you saw a big battle over employers saying that, you know, it was against their religion. They didn't want to have to pay for employees to have access to birth control that they didn't believe in. And so you've seen a big tug of war over that, and that's culminating in, I guess, 2 weeks ago now, the Trump administration issuing a new executive order that would allow employers and schools and anybody else who provides insurance to decide that they have a religious or moral objection to birth control and no longer offer insurance coverage for birth control, which will make it much harder to get. You know, so many women have been able to get access under the ACA birth control requirements. Right now, there's, I think, 62 million women who have been able to take advantage of this no copay birth control. And one of the things you've seen is an uptick in people using more effective methods because they're more able to choose the method that's right for them. Whereas before, if you had to pay upfront costs, if you wanted like an IUD, it could be $1,500 upfront. And that may be the best method for you and the one you want to use, but that cost could be prohibitive. And so you've seen women being able to have more choice in what they would use, and this new administration ruling making it much easier for employers to object to covering birth control could have a real negative impact on that.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Jenny Wetter, Public Policy Director at the Population Institute. Our topic is the Population Institute's new report titled Senseless, The War on Birth Control. In the same 2011 to 2016 timeframe, what steps were taken at the state level to lessen access to birth control?
States took a variety of actions, like in New Jersey. In New Jersey, Chris Christie vetoed a budget that would have offered funding for family planning. Representatives in New Jersey disagreed with that, and they ended up trying to override the veto. But you also saw states like Texas who cut their family planning funding by two-thirds, and it led to the closure of a lot of family planning clinics in Texas. And what Texas actually saw was then a large increase in funding that they were going to have to spend in Medicaid births that could have been prevented if they had kept funding family planning and allowing women to access family planning services. And then you also saw states setting up ways to block Planned Parenthood from getting Title X funding. So you see a lot of states who have set up tiered funding for family planning. So whether that's flat out saying that Planned Parenthood can't get funding or saying that abortion providers can't get funding, or setting up just various levels of who can get funding and having like abortion providers or Planned Parenthood at the very bottom so that if there is money left after they fund all these other programs, then those other people could get family planning funding. You also saw in the states an attempt to push personhood, so-called personhood amendments. They've all not passed so far, and personhood is a direct attack on abortion. It argues that life begins at conception, and that would outlaw abortion, but it would also challenge some forms of birth control that they argue prevent implantation versus conception. So it gets a little kind of technical there, but it would be a real deterrent for women having access to family planning services. You know, we've kind of beat back that effort a little bit right now because it has not managed to pass in any states. That being said, right now, the Department of Health and Human Services is developing their strategic review for 2018 to 2022, I think. And all throughout their strategic plan, they talk about how HHS values life beginning at conception. So it would be bringing that personhood debate to the national stage, which it has kind of stayed away from a little bit.
Well, you've already alluded to this a bit, but what have been the rollbacks and attempted rollbacks for birth control coverage in the U.S. since the Trump administration took over?
So, you know, we talked about the attacks on internationally, so the attacks on United Nations Population Fund, the proposed elimination of funding for international family planning. One of the big things that is already having an impact is whenever there's a Republican since Reagan, they would introduce a policy that we call the global gag rule. It prevents any foreign NGO from receiving family planning funding if they advocate for, counsel, or refer patients for abortion services, even using their non-U.S. money, and that was bad enough as it is. But the Trump administration went much further than that. So previously, that would have impacted about $600 million worth of funding. The Trump administration has vastly expanded that, and it applies to all global health funding now, so about $9 billion. And one of the things that this is going to be extra devastating is that over the course of the Obama administration, there was a real concerted effort to focus on integration of services. So a woman wouldn't have to go to this clinic for malaria and this clinic for family planning and this clinic for maternal health. It was to bring it all into one place so that you could get healthcare the way you would want to get healthcare all in one place. And this could have a real impact on women's ability to access family planning and abortion services. So that's on the international front what has happened. Domestically, so far, they have attacked. There's been a real push to try and defund Planned Parenthood. So far, that has not happened, and there's been a lot of pushback on that. You've also seen, you know, right now the budget is moving forward through Congress, and the House has voted to eliminate all funding for Planned Parenthood, but also for Title X. You also have people being appointed to positions within the government who oversee positions related to birth control or family planning who are very anti-birth control and family planning. And that includes the person who's in charge of Title X, who's been very anti-birth control. And this will have large impacts on how these programs are run. Another place that we've seen an immediate impact is the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program. It's the evidence-based teen pregnancy prevention program that HHS runs, and it's on a 5-year grant cycle. And all the grantees were informed this summer that this would be the last year of their funding, even though they were supposed to have funding for 2 more years. So they're working on eliminating evidence-based sex education. So, you know, not just preventing people's ability to access birth control, but preventing kids from learning about it.
If government support for family planning and reproductive health services ends, what is the likely result for women and their families in the U.S.?
I mean, women are going to be put in a really difficult position. If they are not able to access family planning services, they're going to have to choose, like, if they are able to afford it, or if they're going to have to choose between rent or food. You know, this isn't happening in a vacuum. There are attacks on a lot of the social safety net. So you're looking at, they're talking about cutting Medicaid, so that would be maternal health coverage. So not only wouldn't you be able to get family planning, it would affect your access to maternal health services. And as of today, Congress still hasn't renewed the child health insurance program. So you could be stuck in a place where you don't want to get pregnant, but you can't afford birth control. And the states have been attacking abortion, so it's really hard to get an abortion. Maternal health care is being cut. Children's health insurance might not be covered. Women and families are going to be in a really difficult position, and it's going to impact the most vulnerable people, so low-income people, particularly women of color.
If government support for family planning and reproductive health services ends internationally, what are the results for women and their families?
So there's an extra risk internationally in that there's not a lot of people who can make up the funding gap. You have a lot of countries that are really trying to pull together to help meet the needs of women internationally, and there has been a real effort on it. But if having an unintended pregnancy overseas, the risk of maternal death is so much higher than it is in the U.S. that it could be really dangerous. You know, as I mentioned earlier, according to Guttmacher, if the U.S. eliminates all funding for family planning, you would see 15,000 more maternal deaths. And there are people's lives at stake, and it's really important that we keep funding family planning because it gives women the ability to control their lives.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think it's really important that everyone makes their voice heard, and this is on many levels. There are listeners in states where attacks are happening at the state level. It's important that you're not just talking to your federal level Congress people. You need to talk to your state representatives as well and let them know that it's important to you that we are investing in family planning services. You need to make sure that your Congress people know that and find any local areas that you can support as budgets get tighter to find maybe the local family planning clinic near you that you can help financially support.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Jenny.
Thank you.
You are just listening to Jenny Wetter, Public Policy Director at the Population Institute. For more information, check on the web at populationinstitute.org. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on demand, and then podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and at kexp.org.